This is Norrin Rad.
And I'm Ian Taylor of the Marvel Card Collectors Podcast.
And you're listening to the Rebel Base Card Podcast.
Great pull, kid.
This little one's not worth the effort. Come, let me get you something.
You found something.
You found the Rebel Base Card Podcast.
What a piece of junk.
I'm your host, Greg McLaughlin.
He's as clumsy as he is stupid.
Join me as we discuss Star Wars trading cards and card collecting.
We need a statement, not a manifesto.
We'll talk about sets from the original vintage.
No, the one I'm pointing to.
All the way to current releases.
This?
Yes.
All right, let's get started.
Commence primary ignition.
Welcome back, or if this is your first episode, welcome aboard. My name is Greg McLaughlin, and this is the Rebel Base Card Podcast. Good show for you tonight, as my guest is Fred Avezzano, and he runs the Death Star Dispatch YouTube channel. You can also find him on Twitter at Death Star Dispatch. And after getting to know him for a few months and kind of seeing some of the content he's been producing, as well as some of the collection he's been highlighting, I kind of brought him on my radar to go, you know what, I really want to find out a little more about you and your collection and your content. And he was nice enough to give me a little bit of his time. He's got kind of a busy schedule. And it was really fun. And one of the things that I have really enjoyed from doing the podcast is getting to know the people that I'm interacting with regularly on social media. And what I'm finding, all these folks, all you guys have a great story, have a great collection. And there's these angles, there's these missions you kind of put yourself on. There's, you know, cards and action figures and memorabilia and autographs, all kinds of stuff that make your collection yours. And that's what's really fun to talk to. And, you know, when we're out there and, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I hope you listen to a lot of podcasts. And, you know, there's these amazing folks out there that are content creators, that are, you know, folks from all over the Star Wars spectrum. And I just love finding out stories about folks. It's really fascinating to get a chance to talk with folks. And I think given this time, when we are all kind of depending on each other for the threads that kind of keep us sane, especially in climate like this with everything that's going on, I get done with some of these interviews and it really energizes me to keep going, not just with the podcast, but in general, you know, because I think sometimes you can get into that, you know, habit where you're going to work, you're going home, you're kind of putting yourself in front of the TV and you're not really having a lot of interaction with folks. And maybe social media is your outlet. And I think it goes now more than ever, and I hate using that cliche, but, you know, I hear a lot of folks talk about positivity, and it's something that I like to talk about myself. But I think when you are out there and social media is a large amount of your interactions, there really isn't time for the negativity. And that's not to say that you can't engage. That's not to say you can't engage in discourse that, you know, can come to an interesting conclusion or get both sides of a story. But the trolling, the inane comments is something that we really just don't need. And you don't need me to get on a soapbox to tell you that. But I always, like I said, it always energizes me when people put themselves out there, not just with content creation, but if you're just throwing a picture of your collection, you're like, hey, I just got this cool thing off of eBay, or I've had this in there, and it's fun to really celebrate that with you. And that's one of the reasons and one of the things I enjoy about doing this show. Not a lot of homestead keeping. There has been a cool pod race event in the Star Wars Card Trader app that was happening, and just when I happened to be recording this, it was kind of winding up for the day. But it was kind of fun to, you know, people got assigned to teams, and then there was this pod race where you got these cards out of packs, and some of them would boost your team, some would sabotage other teams, and they did a lap count. And going back to the Empire Strikes Back viewing event, you know, this seemed to be something where on that one, you know, there was so much content that was going out that the servers were kind of getting taxed. This one seemed a little easier. They were putting some of these packs in special free ones you could pick up and other ones where you could buy through crystal packs. And there was ones that were inserted into, in this case, I found some in the Women of Star Wars app. And I thought that was kind of fun. You go to the workbench and you could meld those cards into while you're collecting for. And just seeing some of the back and forth over the last few days, especially today, where people were talking about what they got, what they didn't got, that's what I think it's all about. And I think, you know, we really can help each other out, even if something as silly as the Padres. And, you know, the cards were really cool, but I think it was the interaction back and forth. And a lot of times, you know, folks, you know, they don't spend a ton of time on social media, or maybe with their work schedule so much, it's like, well, I don't get on that much. But I think in some cases, when you get on these groups, and I hope you find a group out there, or whether it's a Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatnot, that you engage with and, you know, interact with. And maybe it doesn't always have to be a sit-down session for an hour. But in some cases, and I'll keep going back to it, a comment here and a like there, an email to a voicemail to their podcast, if you're following them, a retweet means a whole lot. And I just want to say thank you once again to folks who listen to the podcast, even if you listen to it once, or you're a regular listener, or you help get the word out about the show, or I interact with you on other social media as well. You guys mean a lot to me. And it was fun, once again, to get and sit and talk with Fred tonight. I hope you get something out of this. I'll be back on the other side of this conversation to take you home. Let's get into your collection. Like, you know, when I look back and now I can see, you know, I can see the room behind you.
Yeah, this room is, that's tight. So this is the room I just moved into, and I just got these super cool lights back here too. And I can control them on my phone. So like I can make the colors.
Oh, that's sick.
Like, right. This is awesome. And I just finally like got my camera to look nice and crisp too. I got yellow, purple. I have the lighter blue. Just RGB. So I have some options now, and this is great. But yeah, we can do like I'll show you a quick little tour. I will just put this light up a lot more too.
Oh, you got one of those things. I've seen those all over the
internet. Yeah, ring lights, man. They are a lifesaver. So behind me, I have the two glass cabinets. The left side is all Funko. Wow. The right side, I have the Vader helmet up top. I have a Death Trooper on the bottom. Got some artifact statues. Around the artifact statues are my 1977 to 1980 Kenner toys, which I have Darth Vader, Chewbacca, C-3PO, Death Star, Gunner. Then I have Bossk and Lobot and Lando. Middle shelf is Revenge of the Sith, right under the Vader helmet. Just like a lithograph, some movie theater cups, some Burger King toys. Over here is all of the Black Series toys and some 3.75 inch toys. Got some Phantom Menace stuff, the Death Star, Escape the Death Star board game. Hmm. I got BB-8s and more Darth Vaders, and that's all Kylo Ren up there. That is a 1977 Star Wars on vinyl. That I found at an antique store for $5.
Oh, man.
The whole inside's intact. It doesn't have, if I remember right, there was like a pull-out like poster insert sort of thing that came with it, and that is not in it, which I think is why I got it for $5. But yeah, this room is huge now. And then over here on this end, that's where all my trading card stuff is. You can see the boxes from here. I have like a random, this is my step ladder right now where I'm hanging stuff up. I'm using this chair. but yeah, so my collection is I'm not gonna lie, it's quite large.
One of the things I do like, and I'm seeing this, you know, as you start to see other people's collections, is when you get to that glorious place where you can start doing the glass cases, or the shelves, where people are saying this is where a particular movie or show is. And then I think it's great because you've got you've got these items that aren't like with trading cards, right? You have, they're either in binders or in boxes.
Right.
And it's just a shelf full of boxes. But in this case, you could have a small piece with a larger, you could have a, you know, piece of vinyl. You could have a little McDonald's toy, but that can all be together, but it presents this cohesive group. And I think like, if you're going to like a museum, you kind of see this, you're kind of getting a flavor of what they were doing at that time, but also it's something where if I have something that this is related, if a new piece comes into my room, well, okay, I already have an idea of where that's going. And then, you know, I think that's what's really neat about what I'm seeing there, what I'm seeing more and more with folks.
Yeah, I try to keep it as cohesive as possible when it comes to like movies or groups. So like for my Black Series stuff, I have the very top on the closest shelf right up here. Mm-hmm. That's all A New Hope. So I have both variants of Luke Skywalker in Stormtrooper disguise, Han Solo in Stormtrooper disguise, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ghost Obi-Wan Kenobi, Princess Leia, and Farm Boy Luke. The only one I'm really missing is the original Han Solo, which is expensive and a pain to find. So it's not like terribly expensive now, but still, it's like $50. I don't know if I want to spend $50 on one toy. I'm kind of like past that. Underneath that, on the second level, is all The Force Awakens. It's all sequel trilogy, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So I have, you know, I have all the Rays, and this also excludes the top and the middle. All exclude Kylo Ren and Darth Vader, because I have separate things for them because I have so much of their stuff. So I have all the Rays, Snoke, Phasma, Finn, the other Finn, all of that. The next level underneath is prequel era and side stuff. So I have like some Clone Wars. I have some Solo, A Star Wars Story. I have like the Jango Fett, all that good stuff. The level underneath that is all Rebels stuff that I hadn't had room for other shelves yet. So I have like Han on the Tauntaun, K2SO, Jin, Bespin Leia. I have an AST pilot or something from Rogue One. I don't remember the name of it. And then I do have a Shore Trooper, Cassian, another Lando, another Han Solo, the Range Trooper, that kind of thing. Underneath that is all Phantom Menace. Mm. So it's all Phantom Menace on card, with the exclusion of the S5 blaster pistol. That was part of a laser tag game when I was a kid. That's the one I had when I was a kid. And then I have, it's a commemorative Attack of the Clones. It's marketed as Attack of the Clones. It came out with that line. But it's a commemorative cup and Darth Maul figure. But it's Phantom Menace, so I just stuck it with that.
Let me ask you this. I noticed that this stuff it looks out of the box, right?
Most of it is out of the box. I do have some figures in the box, and those are displayed separately. I have them on walls. But now that I've moved into this bigger office, I'm trying to figure out where on the walls I want to put everything. So I haven't hung up any of my autographed photos yet. I haven't hung up any of those action figures yet. They're all just kind of in the corner right now, just stocked up, waiting for a home. the only figures that I really keep in the box are the ones that I know that are worth something, or ones that I really just love the look of them in the box.
That was going to be my question: is where do you make the call versus this is something that I want to, you know, to have, you know, complete? Is this something that I want to display? I always go back to that SNL commercial. The Force Awakens toys one, and I could watch that a million times. I might watch it, you know, like where it's like I have three: one to display, one to open, and one, you know, one just in case. And the kid just coldly goes, "Why?" And it just completely cuts him in half. But that is something where, you know, you start to wonder, you know, where does a collector kind of go? How do they feel about the action figures and the toys they collect?
Right. I'll give you like an example of what I have in the box. So obviously I have all my Phantom Menace stuff in the box just because that was my first Star Wars experience. And I had a lot of these toys growing up. And of course I opened them. I played with them. They're all beat to death. And I only have two that survived. I have Darth Maul and Obi-Wan Kenobi. So those, I only keep them in the box because number one, they mean a lot to me. And number two, I think they look great in the box. The second example, which is pretty much the same parameters, is the Force Awakens toys. Mm-hmm. I keep these in the box. I think the box art on these are incredible. Just look great. They have all this like artwork and stuff. So I have Han Solo, Finn as FN-2187. I have Rey. and I have Constable Zuvio.
You have to have Constable Zuvio.
You have to. You absolutely have to. So these I keep in the box just because of how much The Force Awakens means to me.
That's cool.
The other things I keep in the box, before I get into the other figures, the Funkos that you see in the box.
Right.
Those are all exclusives or they're signed.
Okay.
So anything for me, a regular Funko, I'm not going to open up. I am going to open up because, I mean, they're either going to retain their value or just go down in value. There's no point. I enjoy displaying them. I have a couple up here, but I have a shelf up here. They're not Star Wars. I have like some from Skyrim, some from Stranger Things. I have some from X-Files. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh, and I have the Joker too. But the ones that I have in the box, I can run them down really quick because there's actually not that many. The only one that's not an exclusive that I did not open is Baby Yoda.
I see that.
That thing just, it's always going to be high in value. And if the way I see it, when I buy stuff, I never buy things with the intention of, okay, well, this is going to be worth X amount down the line, so I'm going to sell it later. I buy it because I want it.
Mm-hmm.
But items like that I keep in the box just in case, let's say maybe I lose my job and now I need help paying bills. If I have to part with something in order to live life, then I have to. And keeping things in the box will help me with that. I have the Baby Yoda. Then I have the Amazon exclusive Wampa that just came out. That is a really nice one. I have Poe Dameron in his X-Wing from Smuggler's Bounty. Also from Smuggler's Bounty, I have the Scout Trooper on speeder bike. From Target exclusive, this one actually shocked me. It's Darth Vader in his TIE Advanced. And it was a Target exclusive. I saw it at Target. It was like $22. I bought it. I took it home. I said, I wonder how much this thing even goes for because I've never seen it before. And it was up to like $75 on eBay.
Wow.
I was like, well, I just bought this. This is great. So I kept that one in the box. I have Count Dooku, Smuggler's Bounty exclusive. Kit Fisto, which is a Walgreens exclusive. Another Walmart exclusive. I have a 3-pack of Tarful, Emperor Palpatine, or Chancellor Palpatine. After he's shocked to all hell. He's in like the red robes from Revenge of the Sith. It's a Revenge of the Sith pack. But he's shooting lightning out of his fingers too. It looks amazing. And then it comes with an Utapau Trooper. I have the Duel on Mustafar, which is a Smuggler's Bounty exclusive. That's, you know, Anakin versus Obi-Wan. And then I have the Target exclusive Porg Funko signed by Brian Herring.
Oh, wow.
That one was the pull of a lifetime. I got it in a box called it's like a Force Crate. It's by Dave and Adams.
Okay.
They pretty much make it and the whole nine, and that's like their specific product, and they only make 50 of the boxes, and out of those 50 boxes you had a chance to pull two autographs. One was the Brian Herring Porg and the other one was a Boba Fett Funko signed.
Nice. And
I got the Porg, so that was really good.
And I was going to say, as I was quickly scrolling through here, because I thought that Fantatrax recently did a interview with Brian Herring, if my memory serves. It's a great podcast anyway, but you should... I'll get that in. I'll see if I can put that in the show notes. But that was a great interview as well, because Brian Herring is a mad collector as well. And as soon as I heard that, I was team camp. Yeah, I was camp Brian Herring immediately. I'm like, all right, I loved getting any autograph or things like that. But especially if you're looking at the gal that did Vanessa Marshall, who does.
Yes, she's another one.
Another great collector.
What I would do to talk to Vanessa Marshall and Brian Herring, and honestly, Freddie Prinze Jr. too.
He
isn't like a diehard collector, but he is a Star Wars fan, has been, always will be, And, you know, those are the type of people where, yes, they're actors and things that we worship, but it's above that. They are collectors in their own right. They are fans in their own right. And they can have a conversation just like you and I, where you sit down and you just have a great talk about Star Wars. And those are people I would love to talk to one day.
Oh, exactly. You've only had that stuff in there for a short time, but I'm always amazed and fascinated is by, if we fast forward about a month and a half from now, how do you approach cleaning?
Cleaning, I basically take a day to clean. I pick about a day a month, and normally it's the end of the month. This time it was the beginning of the month because we just moved everything. So what I'll do is I cleared off my desk of everything except for like my mouse and keyboard. I move my chair over, I bring in another chair, and basically I take everything down one at a time. So let's say I'll start with the top shelf. I take the whole top shelf off, I wipe down the top shelf, then I put everything back. Then I will go to the next one and the next one and the next one. Then I also, in between that, after I'm done cleaning the shelf, I'll look at the toys themselves. If the toys themselves got some dust on it, I'll clean those off too. But I don't know if this is a thing or not, but I don't use chemicals on the toys. I just use water.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Water and paper towel, or if I have some handy, I'll use like a very soft cloth to clean the toys. I just don't know what chemicals will react to what, you know, whatever paint applications the toys are using. So I clean the toys themselves with water, and then I use, you know, I actually use like Pine Sol and water to clean everything else. It just smells really good. So that's kind of my process when it comes to cleaning. And you'd be surprised, even though that a lot of this stuff is in glass, they still get dust on them.
That was going to be my next question, because that's something, you know, we are blessed to have an IKEA here in Chicagoland. My office is right across the street from it. And, you know, I've eyed those glass cases more than once because I have, you know, The Kenner is still this. I should have like a little counter up, like when will Greg find his Kenner, like some kind of, you know, like over under. But, you know, I still have the Disney Infinity figures, all of them.
Wow.
And I would love to display those, you know, and that, sometimes it's hard because if you got like a gaggle of them, I've seen some on Instagram and Twitter where it's shelf after shelf, but they're, you know, 12 inches deep of them. You almost kind of need to get, and I know that on Instagram, if you go to like that Gonk Toys, they've been doing those risers, and I've been kind of eyeing those, and I missed out on the pre-orders. I'm like, oh man, because that's perfect. That would be almost perfect for Disney Infinity because they've got those discs on the bottom. But, you know, I'm also looking at eventually, as I'm starting to collect more of the Kenner Micro, I'm trying to find a way where, you know, like, I like it because I can display the figures on the set pieces themselves, or in some cases.
Right.
But I have a feeling, I know me, I think you know yourself as a collector, going, eventually all these dumb figures are going to make their way here. It's just a question of, you know, right now I was like, well, I was focusing just on the Bespin sets. Now I'm trying to find, you know, some of the Death Star sets. And then, you know, eventually I'm going to have all the damn sets. So it's just a matter of how, you know, how much you want to keep those floodgates before they go open. But it's not going to do me much good. Like right now I have a shelf inside our bedroom that's, you know, it's high. I can hide it out, but eventually I wouldn't mind a glass case. But, you know, one, I think in some cases it does cut down on the sheer amount of dust, but still, right. I think you probably have to go in there, like you said, periodically and scrape it.
Yeah. It's not as much as if you were to just have it like the other two cabinets. And yes, all of this is from IKEA, by the way. So the two glass cabinets, those are like $100 each. They're a little bit more pricey. Now these two were $40 each.
Right. Those are your standard, substandard, you know.
Right. They're really easy to build. I mean, I think it took me 20 minutes to put them together. The glass case was a little bit more of an annoyance, but that's only because they don't make them like perfect anymore. So I had one of them that I got works great. Everything lined up perfectly. The other one I bought, everything didn't line up right. The measurements were a little off. So like the door, one of the doors will have like a hard time closing or staying open or whatever. You really got to push it in there. But when you push it in there, all your stuff can fall down. So you kind of have to be careful with that. For your micro figures for Kenner, I actually think it would be best to just get a normal bookshelf. because, like you said, most of them can be displayed on the actual set themselves. Mm-hmm. But the rest, you can have them off to the side a little bit. What I would do in that situation, if you're going to do sets, buy one of these. And the beautiful thing about these is there's little pegs, and you can make the shelves however tall or small you want. Mm-hmm. What I would do is I would get, let's say you get like a Battle of Hoth set. I would print out like a snowy piece of paper, and I would lay that down. Then I would get your Battle of Hoth set, and I would place it in the center, set up all your figures the way you want. Now you can have some on the outside as well. Let's say maybe you buy, later on the road, you buy a walker. Now you can put the walker off to the side, and it looks like it's standing on snow.
You got a whole diorama. I'm digging that idea.
That would be amazing, and it's something that I would love to do one day, but I don't think I'll ever have the room for that, or the money, or the time. It's just a lot. That's the problem with Star Wars. There's always so much that we want to buy that you end up having to sacrifice some things for other things.
I know, and sometimes when I see folks, like especially the Black Series collectors, you know, it's tough because, you know, the box, if they're gonna keep them in the boxes, you know, then you've got, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to peg them? I've seen people like stack them up, and they make so many, and they're going to continue to make a ton. And that's where you start to go, man, you know, what kind of collection or collector am I going to end up being? Sometimes, just like with trading cards, you know, I think you see this more on the Marvel side, where some people will just focus on a character or maybe a movie, as opposed to where, oh, here's the next wave of Black Series, and I get them all, and then all of a sudden it doesn't take maybe board of 2 or 3 years, and you're like, what am I going to do with all these? I think it's interesting as you, and I think probably, you know, there are some collectors who've been doing it, you know, they're OG, or they've been going since the Phantom Menace, and they just have it going forward. I think, right, you know, with me at least, a lot of it kicks back in after The Force Awakens, and so you just start to, you know, and then it takes it now, every now and then you kind of look back and go, where's this going? You know?
That's actually one thing that my wife had said to me when she noticed my collection started really like taking off. She was like, where do you see this going? I'm like, I don't know. One day I'll stop. I don't know. Like I have it over there. I was at Walmart just checking out on normal shopping day, not looking for Star Wars toys or anything. And I'm going through the line at self-checkout, and to my left, there's a Millennium Falcon mini kite for like $3. I bought it. Why? I don't know. I don't need a mini kite, but I bought it. But now I've been thinking, what if I take that kite, tie it to the ceiling fan, and now when I turn the fan on it, I'll just see the Falcon going around. I told my wife about it, and she just looked at me like, you have a problem. She just walked out. Oh man, that's great.
Well, I know in some cases, like, you know, when we were kids, you know, rightly so, your parents would, you know, for us, my mom and dad didn't have a ton of money to spend on stuff, and so anything you got was amazing, and then a lot of times you just held on to it. And now, yeah, as an adult, you kind of do have to kind of hold yourself back because you can't have it all. Right. But, you know, I'm also, you know, it's one thing I started looking, going, you know, about 30, 40 years from now, there's going to be a massive glut of this stuff that's going to hit the market as we all pass away. And I guarantee you, my kids aren't as interested. You know, if they take anything from my collection and hold on to it, I may say, you know, you may want to hold on to this or this or this. The rest is all estate sale or whatnot. But, you know, you can see a ton of stuff. And I think if someone was collecting for value, I don't know if a buy and hold is a good way to do it, because I just think there's just going to be so much stuff, because so many people are going to have rooms like you do where they just are going to collect this. And I don't know how a Black Series figure, you know, a good chunk of them can retain their value only because so many people have them. Just like,
yeah, Black Series is a weird market, I'll tell you that. It really just all varies. Like, obviously, the bigger ones, like the ones that come in 2-packs and 3-packs and stuff, like the Han and Tauntaun, that was a $50 retail. It's starting to climb up there, which is why I have not bought the Luke and Wampa yet, because that one has skyrocketed over the last couple years. I was in You ever watch the show Pawn Stars?
I have, yeah.
Sometimes they have their toy expert come in from a place called Rogue Toys. So I visited my friends that live in Vegas, and we went down to the strip, and we went to go see the Pawn Stars place, and I saw Rogue Toys, and I went in, and I bought a bunch of stuff from the guy that was on TV, which was really cool for me.
Oh, that's cool.
One of the things is he gave me a really good deal on the 77 Darth Vader. It's basically mint condition, except for, of course, the little nipple that comes off the lightsaber is off. But other than that, there's no dents, no scratches, no nicks in the cape or anything. It's perfect. I got it for $30.
It's not bad.
It's pretty great deal for it being as good a condition as it is in. And then I bought the Han and Tauntaun there. I bought a couple other little things. So for Black Series, when you're just talking about your standard individual figures, a lot of the ones that have spiked in value are the original release, like either the blue line box or the orange line box. And those are the ones that came out when they first introduced the line in 2013. And then, of course, it died out after 2013. 2015, TFA came out, and, you know, then it took off. But they mass-produced those more than they did the original ones.
Okay.
So, like, the ones that really stand out for me, not counting the two packs, just standard individual figures, you have Boba Fett, Darth Maul, Anakin Skywalker. And the most valuable is Luke Skywalker in his X-Wing gear because it was a con exclusive. Those go for like hundreds of dollars. They're very, very valuable. Boba Fett you can probably find for maybe $80 to $90. The rest of them are over $100. Anakin's over $200. The Luke and X-Wing gear, $300 roughly. But they came out with that Archive Signature Series. I don't know if the Black Series Archives are going to be worth anything, but I did buy a few of them. I bought Anakin, I bought Bosk, and I bought Luke in his X-Wing gear.
Nice.
So these I've kept in the box, but I have been so tempted over the last few weeks to open these up because I don't think that they're going to go more than, you know, $30 or $40. I don't know. The market for Black Series is really weird. Really weird ones end up getting value. Like I have Qui-Gon Jinn. I pre-ordered Qui-Gon Jinn, $20, came to the house, no problem. Well, now he's going for like $65. Why? I don't know. It's just one of those figures where he's going for more money than the rest and there's no explanation.
And it's so hard to tell if they're announcing a set, you know, okay, they're going to do the new Rebels ones, and, you know, some of them are repeats, and did I hear that Zeb didn't have one before, now he's getting his own?
Yeah, they have the entire Rebels thing, except for Rex, but basically the whole Ghost crew plus Ahsoka. They have all of them out, so you have Ezra and Chopper with updated face for Ezra. You have Kanan with an updated face, Sabine with an updated face, Ahsoka with an updated face, and Zeb, which is brand new. And Zeb is a little bit more expensive because he's a bigger figure. Because, right. I mean, he's tall. So that I don't mind. It's not as expensive as, like, the Moloch from Solo, A Star Wars Story. That was a $50 toy when that came out. Because he's bigger and bulkier, so his packaging doesn't look like this or like the standard red box. It's about the same height, but it's longer and deeper because his head is like long, so it goes backwards. It's a really weird thing, but his that you can find for pretty cheap now. I don't know. The world is weird when it comes to Black Series, but I do think with all of the new box arts that they're coming out with, all of the new face molds that they've been doing, I think the newest wave of Black Series that's coming might be more valuable in the long run because it's going to encourage people to keep their toys in the box. That side box art, they did such a beautiful job with it, and everything being color-coded. It's a 10 out of 10 for box collectors. They're going to keep those toys in the box, and I think those that I think they'll sell quicker. I think they'll sell out quicker.
It's interesting that, you know, instead of taking a shot at just sending out a bunch of figures to, say, a Target or Walmart, that, you know, which in some cases they still are, but now it's more selective. I think probably with Black Series, it's probably arguable that there's a higher margin on it, as opposed to if someone's doing like a 3 3/4 line, where it's like there's the collector out there who's like, I want to make these. These should be for kids. That's how you keep them in. And I think for, say, a Hasbro or a company, there's got to be this tug of war between going, this is where our market is, and they almost kind of have to make the sacrifice to go, you know, do we try to put these out? You know, do we have a line to try to entice newer collectors so that eventually they graduate into the people that we can hit up for this? So, you know, and as such, you know, for me, it's, you know, when I look back at those toys, you know, I definitely like something I can kind of take out and play with. There are things that I have, you know, like even with the trading cards, there are some that of the Galaxy ones that I've collected that I've kept in the box. But I also, you know, just because, you know, it's kind of fun to have some still there. But in addition to that, I'll have that forces me to have another set where I kind of want to fish through it. But there's right. always that tug of war. And like you said, I think it's somewhere, you know, it's like a gamble every time. It's like, well, if I take this one out of the box, is this the one that everybody's now looking for? And I'm like, oh, but it's an interesting, you know, it's definitely an interesting thing to collect.
It's very weird too, because they do also have the Black Series 3.75. And those, I don't think that they really make them that much anymore. I bought a couple of them. I bought Han Solo on Endor, and I bought Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker from Return of the Jedi. Those are the only two I've bought. I don't really have an interest in Black Series 3 3/4 inch, but I love the vintage collection, the retro mm-hmm. collection. All of those are really nice. Like I have this one still on card, the Tarkin from the Escape the Death Star game that came with the retro collection Tarkin.
I need to pick that up, because, you know, it is kind of amazing you never got a fig. And B, I think as a collector, I can say, well, I don't necessarily want to go back and recollect them all. I'm not really crazy about the retro collection's card stock. I think it's real thin.
Yeah, me too.
But as sort of an oddity where he never really had a fig to begin with, you go, okay, I don't have to compare it to what it was before. He just didn't have one. And I think as something, if you have like in a smaller collection, you go, well, that's kind of cool. Here's what it would kind of look like, you know, and I don't really have to do anything. Like, maybe as a kid, maybe that's why, like, does any 7 or 8 year old want to kind of play with what a 60 or 70 year old man figure? Like, that's not really necessarily like when here's Luke and Han. And then here's Governor Tarkin. That doesn't seem like much fun. Maybe they knew something we didn't.
Yeah, and you know what? You probably hit it right in the head there. And I pretty much, from my understanding, they've only come out with 3 Tarkin figures ever: Power of the Force, the Retro Collection, and Black Series. I will say the Black Series Tarkin is gorgeous. They did a beautiful job capturing Peter Cushing's face. He comes with the yes. torture droid, beautiful. And the torture droid comes on in his own little stand, stands up really well. And the retro collection, yes, the problem why I've never collected any of the retro collection is exactly what you said. The card stocks are very thin. They bend very easily. So the Tarkin, I just kept for a long time, I just kept it face down, because I did not even want it to, like, I didn't want to hang it up and then it bend because it's so flimsy, you know? Like when you compare it to something like this Force Awakens back is pretty sturdy. For a 3 3/4 inch, it's pretty sturdy. Like, you're not gonna, you got to put some effort into this to bend it. Where that one, you pick it up and it wants to wilt over like a flower.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunate that it's like that, but he never had a Kenner figure, and I feel like having that is worth it, especially $20. You get a remake of a retro game plus this toy. You know, it's a really good bang for your buck. And I'll tell you what, I played the game with my wife. She hated it, but I really liked it. Because it's, you have to think, it's, they literally took the game from 77 and just remade it. They didn't revise it in any way. Like, your characters are still the way they used to make characters. Like, they're not little like Monopoly Man figures. They're like a piece of paper that you fold over and you stick around on the board. So it's the exact same like that. So it's an outdated game, but I mean, I had fun with it, but it's cool to have something that's kind of a blast from the past.
Yeah. I don't remember. I remember it being out, but I don't ever remember playing it. I don't remember if someone had it or not. Cause I think we were mostly figure collectors then. But yeah, I think it is something where it doesn't take up a lot of space, even if you kept it in the box sealed and go, well, I'll just keep it up there because the artwork on the box is pretty cool. And if you're...
It's very nice.
Especially if you're doing, like, say, a shelf like you're doing, it can sit behind, you know, flush up against, and then, you know, as you're... You know, I think once you've filled out your shelves and there's that space, now what space is left? Well, all that black back shelf space is now real estate that I can, you know, either put to posters up or something like that, and then that really makes those things pop.
Exactly. That's what I have right down here. That's the game right here, and in front of it I have Enfys Nest on her speeder bike from the Black Series.
Oh, nice.
And I know they don't really go together, but I needed a place for Enfys Nest to go, and I chose I chose right there. I remember being so excited for that figure because Enfys Nest is the toy for Enfys is fantastic. I mean, it's up there in terms of the quality of it. It's beautiful. But I mean, it's huge. The Swoosh bike is massive. It literally goes, it's the entire length of the shelf. It barely fit on there. It's massive. So it's like, where do you even put this thing? So I was going to put it on the shelf that's above me. And I was like, no, I'm going to put a bunch of stuff up there. I have some Star Wars, some non-Star Wars. Like I have some of the old school style tin lunch boxes I've got up there. I got a Galaxy of Adventures Rey up there. One of the plastic lightsabers you can get from Walmart. And then everything else. Oh, and I have a Haunted Carbonite carrying case box. But I took the handles off because it was really annoying. So I just popped the handles off, and now it's just like a display piece up there.
What was I seeing online that they were... It was somewhere where I saw like it was a carded figure of the Han Solo and Carbonite.
And yeah, I thought, it's for the Black Series.
Okay, because on the one hand you go, you know, next to Tarkin, that might be one of the most depressing figures to own, but then it might be the only figure you could probably take in the bathtub with you as it kind of floats along, and you could put your, you know, maybe put your phone on it or something like that. Now, there's the next $1 million idea. You're welcome. You're welcome, Hasbro.
That honestly, I've been thinking about whether or not I want to buy that or not. It's like Han and Carbonite, it's just so iconic. So it's like, how do you not do it? But then again, it's a block. Like, what are you gonna do with it? That would be a figure I'd probably keep on card because the card is pretty cool and it's an iconic toy. And I think it would look cool, like posted up on the wall. But the way I hang things up, by the way, especially with things like this where it has like the little hook slot, mm-hmm. I just get a thumbtack and I put the thumbtack in the wall. And I hang this on the thumbtack because obviously you don't want to damage the actual box itself. So that's probably what I would do if I buy it. I just don't know if it's worth it. It's at the end of the day, it's just a block, you know? Like, I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's tough. I was thinking for those Hot Wheels toys that the card backs and the design by Brian Miller. You know, now that I have all five of them, I was thinking of trying to get up a hook or something, like an old retail hook and somehow fasten it to wall so I could hang them, because I thought that would probably be, you know, I was looking at we were talking about the Greg at Ion Cannon, where he recently redid his room and he put a pegboard up, and I thought that's brilliant.
It's a beautiful idea.
You know, there are a lot of the toys, like I said, there'll be some that keep their value, some that won't, but then you have, let's say I have 20 or 30 figures on the wall, or 20 or 30 figures still carded. Where am I going to put them? I almost think as a collector, as someone who enjoyed going into stores, that's, you know, that's the toys in their natural environment, and you can kind of put through, and if you want to change, you know, which ones are in front based on your mood. But on the one hand, yeah, it doesn't hurt they were designed to be hung up, and I think that kind of makes it fun. It's a nice way to display. Once again, you would still have to take them. Anything's going to gather dust.
100%.
But
I'll tell you this: one thing that I would recommend looking into if I were you, the Collector's Hut. I'm sure you've heard of them.
Yes.
The Collector's Hut did probably a year or two ago now. Did a tour of his basement. He turned his basement into a Star Wars museum. And, you know, he is the Collector's Hut for a reason. I don't know what this man does for a living, but the money this man has for the stuff that he has, I mean, he has like life-sized clone models and shit. Like it's nuts. But one of the things that he did was he collects figures, and he usually buys two of every figure. He has one that he opens and one that he keeps on the card. And what he did is that exactly that. He had a pegboard. Well, a lot of pegboards, and he put a lot of those hanging sticks on them. I don't even know what to call them. I'm blanking out. So there's a portion of his wall, and it's all just toys that are organized, obviously, by set on his walls, and they look amazing.
I think that, as much as I like the shelves, I like that idea, and I think it's a fun one, and, you know, it's... Whether you have a shelf, whether you have a room or a basement, definitely a understanding spouse. You know, I think there is some fun to customizing it. Keep it just getting from clutter. I think that's where, in some cases, if you don't have a dedicated space where it's just in boxes or things like that, you know, that I think kind of comes, that's the next step, is you want to display them. You want to play with them, but you just want to have an area, and then, you know, everybody has their own. And then, of course, the final logical conclusion is the Instagram page where you where you share it with
others. Yes. I just added this too. This is something you'll appreciate. What I'm going to do is I'm going to start. I've never been a sticker guy, but lately I've been really wanting to get a bunch of stickers of other podcasts and other shows and stuff. So I got this weird steel thing that hung up. So right here I have yours.
Nice.
I have the Behind the Bucket that you gave me, and then that's my original Wampa guy. I have my new sticker for the new logo and everything coming. I'll put that one in the middle, since that's me. And then I'm going to start buying stickers from other people. Like, I have to get that Snoke Theory Sucks sticker from Steel Wars. There's so many that I want to get. So I'm going to just start loading this thing up with stickers from other podcasts. And if I run out of room on this, I'll just buy another one of these. I'll hang it up right below it or right next to it, and I'll go from there.
My son apparently ordered something, and UPS came. I'm like, I'm not expecting people right now.
Got you. I'm expecting a ton of stuff. I've just ordered quite a few things. I got the Baby Yoda Black series that's coming on the way. I had to buy Master and Apprentice again, so I bought the paperback this time. I lost a bunch of books when I was moving, and one of the book I lost Master and Apprentice. I lost Catalyst. I lost Ahsoka, and I lost a vintage sticker book. Which it's a reproduction of a vintage sticker book, but still,
that's the Abrams one, right?
Yeah,
yeah, I have that. That's beautiful. Nice.
I used to stick those things everywhere, and I lost it. I don't know. I have checked every box. I have no idea where those stickers went. But and I also got a picture frame finally coming in for the Ian McDiarmid Palpatine autograph that I have.
Ooh, nice!
Finally, 11x14.
Was that at Celebration?
No. So this I bought from, it was pulled in a break at Rip and Gypsy. So Rip and Gypsy got it from another store, I guess is the good word for it. An online store that does almost like mystery box autographs.
Okay.
So they'll go to Celebration. They'll go to every con that they can. It's basically a sci-fi and horror box. So you can either pull things from Star Wars, Star Trek, all the way to like Halloween, Scream, Nightmare on Elm Street, stuff like that. So that Emperor came out of that box. Ooh, so yeah. It's PSA certified and all that good stuff too. So it comes with the certificate of authentication, And it's beautiful. I mean, it's one of my favorite shots of the Emperor. It's one of those promo shots. It's just a real good close-up of his face. And I actually have it right here because I just pulled it out. There it is.
Ooh, that is nice.
Yeah, so I double-checked, even though it's PSA certified and everything, I had to double-check and make sure that his autograph looked like it should. And it's spot on. I mean, the way he writes everything, including Emperor, it's beautiful. So on the back, it tells you right here, certificate of authenticity. And then over here, it's just a little thing on Ian McDiarmid. PSA DNA authentication services examined and certified in Orlando. Yeah, it's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, I have to find a frame for my a friend of mine got me a Biggs autograph for Christmas from Star Wars Authentics, and I think it's the 11x17. I don't think it's an 8x10, so I have to find a nice frame for it. But yeah, it's one of those where, you know, gosh, when you think about the people who collect, who go after those kind of collections, and, you know, even Topps that does the, you know, the Star Wars Authentics, they'll not only is it the site, but they'll also do, they'll do those yearly releases of, oh, we're going to do the 8x10s that come with the cards and things like that. There's that whole other subset of collectors out there who just go after that and all the care and things they have to do and what you have to, especially if you're trying to display something. And now when you're going back, what you were talking about, like cleaning products, now you have light that, you yes. know, you have to be conscious of. And it goes back to what do you keep sealed away? What would you like to display? A lot of things I think is the average collector or the normal fan doesn't have to necessarily worry about. I like that flag you got draped over the window, which does two things. I think when you're doing your YouTube videos, what I like about the background, it goes back to your lights, is that so you have a nice blank wall on the one side of you next to the window. So that's going to pick up the light really well. And then you've got that solid, you know, we can tell it's a Imperial symbol.
Right.
So you don't have to do too much for it. It's, you know, helping you cover some of the light up, but also it gives the viewer something nice. And then in the back, your entire collection makes a nice background, so you don't have to do the, you know, like what I do for some, you know, if I'm going on video where you do like the, hey, I'm in a Millennium Falcon cockpit.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily compete with. But how many videos have you done since you've been in the new space?
Since I've been in the new space, only one. No, two. I've only done two. And what I'm noticing is, and this is probably a gripe just for me because I'm a bit of a perfectionist when it comes to creating content. This, as you see behind me, like it doesn't really glare out the light from the sun. It doesn't really glare out, but when I'm recording during the day, the light will try to peek through there, and you can't really tell that it looks like that bad, you know, because the way I have the camera settings and the contrast plus the lights behind me really help kind of make that dimmed out. But the problem I have is when that light comes through, my eye just wants to go to it. And I feel like if my eye wants to go to it, the viewer's eyes might want to go to it. So I try to do my recording at night since I do have that weird schedule. Most of my recording that I do, I'll do at night because when there's no outside light coming in here, I have the back lights, I have the ring light in front of me, so everything will be nice and illuminated, even in the dark. And to me, that's where it looks the most crisp.
How long have you been doing the videos?
This month is a year.
Okay.
Whole year. In the beginning, when I first started, I did it for collecting, so I opened trading card boxes. My first ever video was one of those special retail boxes from The Force Awakens. It's 24 packs, but you're not guaranteed a hit. So but they're cheap. They were like $20, $25.
Right.
So I said, you know what? This is more than worth it. I can't wait. I'm really excited to start. I used a really crappy 720p camera, and it honestly looked awful. I didn't know how to make a thumbnail. I didn't know how to speak in front of the camera. Now, I did have the background in Twitch streaming, so talking to the camera ended up not being too much of an issue in the beginning. But when you're – I was used to talking to a live audience, where this time I'm just talking to myself. And I had to keep – I pretty much had to put in my brain, you are talking to an audience. They just haven't seen it yet. So talk the way you would normally talk. Everything will go fine. So that was one of my beginning struggles. So I started with collecting, and I still do collecting videos. I just did one on the bounty box from Daniel Logan. That was a really fun opening, by the way. And I still do collecting, but I've also branched out into other things. I do lore. I do top fives. I talk about current events. And then, of course, the big one for me was the Clone Wars reactions.
How do you feel doing reaction videos?
I'm a big fan of reaction videos because they're as genuine as it can get. That is someone's first experience watching something for the first time. And the way I've always gone about it, I don't know how other people do it, but I only watch it once. I only record it once. Whatever the reaction is what it is. I'm not trying to fake anything. I don't want to put any kind of disingenuity. Is that even a word?
You know, disingenuous?
Disingenuous. There we go. Yeah, I don't want it to come across as disingenuous. So I only do one take, and I think they're great. I think seeing someone's eyes light up when a scene pops up, or them freaking out like I did in the Clone Wars. At one point, I started crying, and I was like, oh, my God. You know, I think those are the emotions that when captured on camera and put out there in the world, you're putting yourself out there in a pretty vulnerable state. And I think it's entertaining and relatable.
And you think that, I mean, it's funny that, and I watch my daughter do it. I think there is this, people want to see, you know, people want to see what other people think of it. Now, sometimes you can get with some folks who do reaction videos that do, you could probably argue, go a little over the top. You know, like there is the reaction you would have if no one was watching as opposed to if everyone was watching. So I think you're probably trying to keep that balance of, yes, I realize the camera's on me, but I'm in the moment and this is, you know, what you're seeing is that honest reaction to it, you know, good or bad. Which I think, if, like I said, if it's done right, it can be, you know, real engaging entertainment. But I think it's got to be an interesting balance to try to keep that. Am I still in frame? Still, that kind of stuff. What are some of the other things that you've noticed since you've done some of these?
The one thing that I noticed in terms of reactions, with the Clone Wars, it might be a kind of a unique situation because it was so beloved by so many people. So my Clone Wars reactions are by far the most views I've ever had on anything. The peak of Shattered, which was the Order 66 episode, I mean, that completely broke and I freaked out. That was the episode that just destroyed me mentally. It was so emotional to watch all of that happen. And me being a prequel kid, going back and reliving Order 66 in my head as we know it from Revenge of the Sith, then tying it into the Clone Wars and all of these characters that we've loved for so long. That episode broke me. That video got 31,000 views. Wow. And to this day, like, it's still getting views. Last month, that I put that out obviously in May when it came out. That video was my most watched video of last month, of June. So it's still getting traction, and it's crazy to me that is a thing. But I think the most important thing is, like you said, the balance is key. The thing that I always did was I tell myself, you are on camera, you can't just sit there in silence. Instead of sitting there in silence, say what you're thinking. Just say it out loud. Take the filter off, just say it out loud. And I think that really helps. I think putting your thoughts out there just on a whim, without a filter, without thinking. Because there was times where in the finale when the bird, the name of the bird. I'm blanking now.
The owl, I know what you're talking
about. Yeah, I blanked out because I was still freaking out at the sight of Darth Vader. I was like, why is there a bird? What is the bird doing? I don't understand. And after I stopped recording, I just kind of looked at myself in the camera and I was like, wait, I know exactly what that is. But yeah, so it's things like that where you mess up sometimes, but if I didn't mess up and if I went back and recorded it again, it wouldn't be genuine. So I couldn't do that. So yeah. I would rather absorb those mistakes, or if you want to call them mistakes, but I would rather absorb that and deal with people in the comments roasting me later than me putting something out there that's not true to myself and genuine.
You know, in a platform that is notorious for those comments, how have you had to kind of deal with people commenting on your content, whether good or bad, or, you know, bat crazy? How do you handle comments?
The way comments work is usually one of two ways. It's people coming in saying like, hey, I love this, thank you, whatever it is. And I'm very appreciative of anyone who comments, whether it's good or bad. The way I take bad comments is a way to grow. You know, that's direct feedback from people that are watching my content that are saying, this is a problem that I have with your video. And if it's something that I read it and I say, okay, they're right, I could do this better, I feel like that's beneficial. So I don't mind the good or bad comments. Bring them all on. The biggest issue, though, is like the trolling type of comments. I had one guy, I put a video out on Lego Star Wars, the Skywalker saga. And I had a guy come in there and tell me, hey, I don't want to be rude, but this guy did it better. So the way I handle that is, listen, I made it the way I wanted to make it. You're not even giving me feedback. You're just saying someone else did it better. If you think someone else did it better, go watch that other person.
Right.
You know, and no hard feelings. Like my content, your content, and anyone's content out there is not going to be for every single Star Wars fan. You know, some people might really, really love what I do, and some people might just say, hey, this is not for me. And that is okay. But when you come into someone who's working hard on this stuff, and we all work hard on our content, when you go in and you say, this person did it better, and you leave no feedback on how it could be better or worse or whatever, it's like, man, the only thing I said was, if you like their content, go watch them. I made what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's sometimes, unfortunately, the way you have to deal with it, because you do have to deal with, you know, some internet trolls and stuff. And I will say I'm pretty proud on commenting back to almost every single comment that I get, because I want the sense of community and relationship with viewers. I don't want it to just be, you know, me put a video out there, people watch it, they comment stuff, and then I don't interact with them. The reason I started doing all of this in the first place is for that sense of community and feeling within the Star Wars fandom. So I learned that the hard way. Sometimes you can't reply to everybody. Some of the Clone Wars things had upwards of, you know, 300-400 comments, and I'm going through all of them and replying to all of them, and I got burnt out on it. I'm not gonna lie, it takes a toll, because you're sitting there. I was sitting there one morning, the morning of Shattered. I woke up and I saw the views, and I had like 150 comments in like 5 hours. And I was just staring at my phone like, oh man, here we go. And it took me like 2 hours of just sitting there with my morning coffee replying to everybody. As much as I would love to keep doing that, I still try. But sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and say, I can't get to everybody. It's just impossible with time restraints in life.
Is it hard chasing after a successful video like that? Is it fair to compare the other videos to each other?
I don't think it is fair to compare videos to one another, because everybody brings something unique to the table. Content is successful when you bring something unique in. Like I have a mini series about character biographies. I'm doing smaller characters that I feel deserve more light. And the way I do it is I go through their entire life, every little detail that I can possibly fit into a video. Someone might watch someone like Alex from Star Wars explain and say, well, this is the guy for that. And yes, he is the guy for that. He is the master. I love Star Wars Explains content, but I'm not going to compare my content to his. he's much better at having his videos be shorter, but filled with the information that you really need to know, where I am not as good with working words out in shorter structured sentences. So I make my sentences longer and I try to give as much detail as I can. He's giving you the rundown, you know, real snappy, real quick. And it's, he does it beautifully. There's no person that can top him. And when I decided to start doing that series, I didn't try to do it to copy him or top him. I did it because I like learning. Mm-hmm. The way I've always seen it is, okay, let's take a character like Satine from the Clone Wars. I love the Clone Wars and I love Satine's character. I think she brought an interesting dynamic to Obi-Wan that we've never seen before. I wanted to learn more about her. As I started researching about her, I said, this would make for a fun video just to put some information out there. And that's how it all got started. I said, I'm going to do research on a character for no other reason than for fun, because I want to learn about this character. And I think putting those into videos is fun. And I'm not, you know, I don't want to be compared to another guy that's doing it, because I'm doing it for completely different reasons.
But even when you're comparing your own videos, whether it's the successful ones versus the other successful ones, you could probably drive yourself crazy wondering why one gets hits and the other. But as you're creating new ones, I think it's probably got to be a bit of a challenge to try to figure out, you know, it's almost like someone going in to say they're hitting, they got, you know, all sevens on a slot machine. They go into Vegas, they hit the jackpot the first time, and then they kind of seem like they're chasing that jackpot for the rest of their, you know, gambling career or whatnot. I'm wondering, when you're a content creator, especially something like YouTube, where something can blow up, you know, to whatever regards, that the follow-up content, you know, you always have that number in your head, probably whether you're intending to or not. I think there's always that, maybe that fair or unfair comparison.
Yeah, and that's a dangerous path to go on. And I've learned that the hard way. After the success of the Clone Wars videos I put out there, you know, everything started to die down, which I did anticipate. But after, you know, after seeing numbers in the tens of thousands, and then you're going down into like just double digit numbers, it can kind of mess with your head a little bit. You know, you're like, what did I do wrong? Because automatically you're putting the blame on yourself. What did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. Why am I not matching up this content? And the thing with content creation is it's all about how the swing of things are going, what's trending, all that good stuff. So the Clone Wars was trending, so my videos took off because I was one of the first people on the internet to get them out there. I'd come home, as soon as I got home from work, the video or the episode would drop. I would get changed, sit in front of my computer, record the reaction, one take, throw it in the editor, get it on the internet as soon as I can. So capitalizing on that was key for me. And I had to teach myself, don't look back on the success of your previous content, because your content can continue to get better. So though my numbers dwindled, at first it messed with my head, but now I take it as a learning experience where, okay, these videos that I'm doing now aren't getting those views, but this is a beautiful opportunity for me to improve my content, not only visually, but the way I'm expressing whatever I'm talking about, the way my mic sounds, the way my webcam looks, if I'm doing like an image slideshow for a character bio, the way those transition over. Everything is a learning experience, and I think if you beat yourself up by trying to compare your past success to what you're doing now, it's just going to hurt you in the end. You learn and you move forward.
What are some of the things you're excited about bringing to the table for your channel?
I think the thing I'm most excited for is to do reactions again. I've been doing reactions to Jedi Temple challenges. I've missed the last couple of weeks. The first week I missed it on accident. But I've actually decided to stop reacting to those because it's almost the same thing every episode. Right. You know, you have, you know, a three set of challenges and three teams, and one team wins it all. And the only thing that's different is what team wins and do they even make it to the end. And I think in terms of reactions, it might not be the best to do. But reactions are so fun because of how genuine they are. So when The Mandalorian Season 2 drops, I'm very excited to do reactions on that. And of course, when it comes to the collectible sides of things, I have two things that I'm really excited for. The first is the Mandalorian trading cards.
Yes.
When those come out, I'm going to go as hard as I possibly can financially, because we can't argue the success of the Mandalorian and how popular it is. And everyone loves it. I've never talked to anybody that says they don't like the Mandalorian. This is going to be something really fun that I think a lot of people who love the Mandalorian can get into. And that's going to be an absolute blast to open up all those packs. And the other thing that I'm excited about is COVID, of course, is still a threat, but stores are open back up now. And I haven't been able to go to any local shops. So I'm undecided right now if I want to do a vlog style where I go through these shops and kind of take you guys with me on the journey of me buying stuff from comic shops and antique stores and stuff, basically hunting for a good deal. So I haven't decided if I'm going to do it in a vlog style or if I'm going to go out and do it, just do a little bit of filming, then come home and do a recap of everything that I've bought in those stores. I think those are really fun too, because the way that you find some items out there in the wild is absolutely crazy.
Excellent, excellent. And where can people find you and find your YouTube channel or online?
You can find me on Twitter at Fred Death Star. You can find me on Instagram at Death Star Dispatch and on YouTube at Death Star Dispatch. And as of right now, those are my only three main platforms that I use.
Like everything else, it creeps out there, I have a feeling.
It always does.
Excellent. Fred, it's been awesome to get to talk with you today, and I wish you success for the YouTube channel. I recommend people check that out, and definitely check you out on Twitter, because we see you a lot on there, and it's fun. You're part of the day-to-day conversation that I have out there, and so it's been a blast to get to know you, and it's fun to finally get a chance to know a little more about you, and wish you all success in the world.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. This has been a lot of fun, and yeah, we've been talking pretty much every day for a long time now, so this was a long time coming, and I'm really excited and honored to be a guest on your show.
Thank you. Once again, my thanks to Fred for being on the program tonight. It was a pleasure to get a chance to talk with him, learn about his content and his collection. If you have any feedback for tonight's episode, you can do so in a number of ways. You can leave an Instagram comment on the post for this episode. You can also DM me there at Rebel Base Card. On Twitter and Facebook, you can find me also at Rebel Base Card. You can email the program, greg@rebelbasecard.com. You can also find the show notes for this as well as all episodes on the website, rebelbasecard.com. In the Star Wars Card Trader app, you can find me at CornFedTech. If you are a sketch card artist or Star Wars artist or collector, cosplayer, want to talk about your work, your craft, your passion, drop me a line and maybe we can work something out. I'd love to get a chance to talk with you. You can also help out the show by leaving a comment and review on iTunes or wherever you get this podcast from. Otherwise, keep those cards out of the hands of the Empire, folks, and I'll talk to you soon.
The music for this podcast is brought to you under a Creative Commons license from Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails. This is Discipline off the album The Slip.
This podcast is not affiliated in any way with Topps, Disney, or Star Wars, nor is it endorsed by Disney or Lucasfilm, and is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. All names and sounds and any other related items are properties of their respective trademarks and or copyright holders here in the U.S. and abroad. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com.